How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Don't look into the light.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. We are back with, I believe this is the 7th season preview podcast, and we're heading back to the Eastern Conference today. And we're going to be talking about a team that I think has pretty high hopes for this upcoming season and pretty consistent fantasy value all around, and that is the Washington Wizards. And to discuss the Washington Wizards, I am joined by the host of the Locked On Wizards podcast, Ben Standig. Ben, how are you?
Josh, I am doing great. I feel like we're in this truly dead time. The NBA offseason almost never ends. But we're in this lull. I'm ready for it to come out on the other side, so it's good to talk some specific basketball specifics with you here to get me through this.
Yeah, this is dead time. So this is why I do these previews at this time, because pretty much everything's settled. We're heading into camp. We don't have every bit of information about certain things, but we're fairly settled as we head into the season. So this is the good time for us to do it. So what we do on these shows, if you haven't listened to any of the season preview podcasts before, start off just by looking at the players that the teams have acquired and how they're going to fit in and what that's going to mean, who the team loses, and then ask some general questions about certain things that are happening around the team. So we'll start with the Wizards and who they acquired. And unlike most teams, their offseason was fairly inactive. No big name moves, no impactful moves, really more just trying to solidify that bench, which was so poor at times during the season. So they acquired Jody Meeks. They signed him to a free agent deal after he's played, I think, 36 games over the past two seasons, last season for the Magic, the year before for the Pistons. And he comes in, I guess, ostensibly, Ben, to replace Bojan Bogdanović as that bench three-point scorer.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, they needed to get one way or the other, even if Bogdanović came back, they needed a shooter in the backcourt. You know, you mentioned how poor the bench was. It was particularly dismal behind John Wall and Bradley Beal. They just, those guys went to the bench and everything went kaput. So they needed something, and they needed both a point guard behind Wall, which we'll get to in a second, but they also needed a shooter. I mean, Meeks, he can definitely do that. He's pretty high percentage shooter for his, in recent years in his career, but like you mentioned, how few games he's played, that's really going to be the key for him, is how much can I actually get out of him?
Because he's had that broken foot, which just has been a continual problem for him over these past 3 years. Like a couple of years back, he was putting up pretty decent numbers as a member of the Mike D'Antoni Lakers, but we're talking 3 or 4 years ago now, so I'm not sure we can rely on that sort of production from Meeks. Like, we can't even rely upon him for even three quarters of a season at this point. But he is going to be a guy that, and I say this all the time, when you're looking for three-pointers in your fantasy league, you can find these bench guys who come in and play 15 to 20 minutes, who can hit one and a half threes a game and really be that guy, like Nick Young was last year, like Troy Daniels was last year, like Wayne Ellington was last year. Like, Meeks has a chance to be one of those three-point streamers, but apart from that, he doesn't offer very much else. He's a good free throw shooter, but it's on low volume. The minutes won't be there. The games won't be there. So he's not going to have a massive impact. Now, you alluded to it already in terms of the backup point guard. It was probably one of the better trades of the offseason, as stupid as that sounds when the trade involves the 52nd pick in the draft. But acquiring a competent backup point guard in Tim Frazier, who started plenty of games last season for the Pelicans, in exchange for that pick, which is generally going to turn into nothing, is a good deal. So Frazier moves into that role that Brandon Jennings held last year and didn't do very well in. And you would have to think, Ben, that Frazier is going to be at least an upgrade on Jennings, who was poor for the majority of the time he was in Washington.
Boy, you'd have to think. I mean, the bar is pretty low. You'd have to think it's going to be an upgrade for sure. If it's not, I give up trying to predict the Wizards are, you know, finally solving their backup point guard problem behind John Wall. It's been an ongoing issue. I do think Frazier is a legitimate upgrade, and you know, knock on wood, if something happens to Wall, you know, I think he's somebody who's shown he can come in and lead a team. But in terms of the backup spot, you know, one reason the Wizards kind of went light last year in terms of, you know, first they started with Trey Burke, then they got to Jennings. The one reason they didn't invest a ton is I think they kind of view it as John Wall plays 36, 38 minutes a game. You're only talking about 10 minutes just as the pure backup point guard. And I don't think they wanted to make a major investment in that spot. Hopefully, I think they've learned their lesson. I mean, so I think that's why they went to get Frazier, although he doesn't cost them a ton financially, but he does a lot of things. I mean, he had a triple double, I believe, last year. Yep. You know, he averaged, 5.2 assists. I think I would just say from a fantasy perspective, I don't know how many minutes he's going to get. I don't see him playing a ton with Wall. So he may only play, instead of playing like 23 minutes last year, maybe looking at like, you know, 12, 15 this year.
Yeah, I've got him at about 15 minutes, and that's, you know, accounting for maybe some games that Wall misses or Wall plays fewer minutes in blowouts and that sort of stuff. But he is going to be that guy that even in that short time period can give you maybe three and a half assists. And much like I mentioned with Meek streaming in for threes, like those sort of assist numbers are fine. Like if your team as an overall whole in a fantasy standard league averages four assists per player, then you're in a really good spot in that assist category. So streaming a guy like Frazier in who can come off the bench, give those assists, you know, hit some threes, get some steals in that limited time, that can be useful as well. But and he's a name that, especially if Wall goes down, then you go and grab him immediately because he's going to be able to put up, you know, 8-9 assists from time to time and be able to put up decent numbers. He's nowhere near Wall, of course, but he becomes that player who can become extremely useful in that situation. So one of those backup point guards that immediately, as soon as Wall goes down, if Wall goes down, hopefully not, but you'd want to be grabbing Frazier in that sort of a situation. The other guy they added who I'm not even sure if he's going to be 100% a part of the rotation is Mike Scott, who previously was playing for the Atlanta Hawks, was traded to Phoenix, didn't really play much at all last season, had those legal issues that he was dealing with. How do you see Scott fitting in to this team in the rotation? I'm not sure that he's going to be an every night part of it, but you might have a different view of that.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what to make of him either. I mean, on the one hand, he's kind of just a power forward, right? I mean, I'm not saying that negatively. I just mean that's kind of what he is. The Wizards really need somebody who can play sort of that stretch five, because with Marcin Gortat and Jan Mahimi, they have two old traditional centers. They don't have somebody who can really get on the perimeter. You can play Markieff Morris some, Jason Smith a little, but I was hoping whatever big man they were going to add would be able to do that. I don't think Mike Scott, though, is a stretch five. I mean, I guess in the modern NBA, you know, anybody can play almost anywhere on some level, you know, but I don't see him as that. So you've got Markieff Morris, you've got Jason Smith. I don't see Jason Smith was kind of a revelation last year. I think he ended up playing more minutes than they wanted. And obviously Mike Scott was a big factor for Atlanta 2 years prior, but you know, before you mentioned his issues last season. So I think there's a chance he could eventually settle into the primary backup behind Markieff Morris. But, you know, I'm not ready to assume that that's going to happen. And, you know, certainly from like a fantasy perspective, he's nowhere near somebody you should be considering at drafts at least.
The other thing that they can do also at that backup four spot is they can push Otto Porter there and play more Kelly Oubre, or play Kelly Oubre there and keep Porter at the three and run Markieff Morris perhaps at the five in some of those smaller ball units as well. So that's going to limit Scott. So I don't think he had his moments in Atlanta and people did really like him for fantasy in Atlanta. I was never a massive fan of him. I thought he was considerably overrated. He hit a lot of threes and that can be useful if he does get into the rotation, but he's not someone who is an all-round fantasy starter or is going to be able to contribute in limited minutes. There's very little use there. The other two guys they brought in on two-way deals, Devin Robinson and Michael Young, they're going to have very little impact from a fantasy point of view. The guys that left, we talked about already. Bojan Bogdanovic went to the Pacers. Brandon Jennings has gone to China, I believe, and Trey Burke is floating around in purgatory at the moment with no team. He was putrid last season, and that's probably why he doesn't have a team to play for. They also didn't have any selections in the draft. That pick that they had was traded to get Tim Frazier. So in terms of guys joining the team, it's not much. Like, pretty much it's the same sort of core that's coming back, and it's the same guys, and we'll be looking for what's going to change internally with this team. So let's look at maybe some injury concerns that this team had.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10, select styles only.
I think the biggest one that we want to look at the moment, it's going to have a significant impact, I guess, on some people's fantasy drafts, is Jan Mihinmi's knee. He missed the start of last season, came back, looked pretty decent, but then has also had some more off-season knee surgery. Where is Mihinmi at with that knee at the moment? Will he be ready to go by camp? And you know, what was the sort of the nature of that surgery that he had after the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, as far as we know, he'll be good to go, you know, for the season. It was sort of the Wizards, like you said, they didn't have a ton of off-season big moves, but they had it. But because they had the John Wall and Otto Porter big signings, which I'm sure we'll get to on some level, there were press conferences for there. And then one of those, I can't remember which one, but it came out that Mihinmi had something. I think Scott Brooks mentioned that, and we didn't really get details as to what he had. So, unfortunately, it's a little vague there. But from everything I can tell, indications are Mihinmi should be good for the season. You know, the Wizards have a long tradition, though, of guys having something that's not considered a big injury, and then they're out for weeks and weeks. So we've learned to temper expectations until we see with our own eyes. But we're assuming Mihinmi will be back. And, you know, the reality is I know a lot of people sort of crapped on him around here a year ago, in the sense that the Wizards gave him a lot of money, 4 years, $64 million. He barely played really last year. And even in the playoffs, he played, but he was pretty limited with his injury. I still think, though, that the guy can play in the 25 games that he really played consistently during the second half of the season. The Wizards bench was significantly better. But, you know, again, from a fantasy perspective, he can help you with rebounding and blocks. But that's only going to be, I would assume, if he starts kind of taking minutes away from Marcin Gortat. He, you know, for now he only may play 20-22, you know, depending, and that may not be enough, but you know, I think there's a chance he could give you some more if he, you know, works his way into some bigger minutes.
The biggest impact that Mihinmi is going to have, well, he's also a center who's quite good at getting steals. We saw him have some monster steal games last year. He's got a high field goal percentage, but he's not a guy that's really in consideration for standard leagues, I don't think. He's more of a deeper league guy. But the biggest impact I believe that Mihinmi has in terms of fantasy leagues is limiting what Gortat can do. So Gortat, before Mihinmi's injury, was playing like 32, 34 minutes a game, and people were really interested in him in fantasy. Oh, look at this, he's playing all these minutes. But, you know, I was consistently reminding people last year, as soon as Mihinmi comes back, you know, Gortat's not playing 36 a night. He's not playing 34 a night. And we saw down the end of the season that Gortat was playing like 25 minutes a night, 26 minutes a night. And he's currently being drafted at pick 61 on Yahoo and pick 64 on ESPN. And in order for him to, you know, live up to that sort of level, he needs to play 32 minutes a night. And Ben, I don't see any way that Gortat is going out there at the age of 32 or maybe even 33 now that he is playing 32 to 34 minutes a night this season if Mihinmi's fully healthy.
Yeah, I just pulled up his stats just to sort of look to see what you're, you know, and you're right. I mean, he averaged pre-All-Star break 34.5 minutes, 11.9 points, 11.4 rebounds. Post-All-Star break, 24 minutes, 8.4 points, 8.2 rebounds. And I suspect you're right that that post-All-Star break is probably what we're looking at with regards to Gortat's minutes and therefore probably production. I think Marcin Gortat, if he was in a different situation and, you know, maybe he was playing for a worse team or whatever you want to say, he could probably be a double-double consistent guy, maybe even score more points than he has. But with John Wall, with Bradley Beal, the emergence of Otto Porter, they, you know, Markieff Morris, you know, they just need him to be more of that, you know, fullback, you know, to use an NFL term, like sort of that blocking back, sort of the guy who does the dirty work, you know, he's the screener. He gets the offensive rebounds. He's really good at the tap outs, those type of hustle plays, but they just barely ever run plays for him. And, you know, like you said, with Mahimi's presence, assuming he's healthy, it's as hard to see how Gortat is going to play tons of minutes, on a nightly basis.
To me, he is the player, probably the player in the entire NBA who is going to get overdrafted the most if people are going based on those average draft positions. That's 70, 80 spots too high. That's factoring in him playing 34 or not at pick 60. And if you take him at pick 60, it is a complete waste, in my opinion, unless Mahinmi is hurt, and then he does have to play those minutes. But there is just no way that he is playing 34 or not this season, which would see him up in that top 60. That is just the guy who is most overvalued at the moment in terms of those ADP numbers, and just really need to be careful with that and avoid him at all costs at that sort of a spot. It just isn't going to work out for him. Now, the couple of other injuries we had for Wizards guys heading into last season, which were a concern, and I just want to make sure there's no lingering issues with those. John Wall had those knee problems, and it cost him at the start of the year. You know, he sat out a couple of back-to-backs, but I don't think there's any concern with that heading into this season, is there, Ben?
No, nothing that we know of. I mean, if you follow him on social media or anything like that, but you know, he's constantly putting up videos of himself working out, doing different things. In a general sense, you know, talking to John Wall, I saw Markieff Morris a couple of weeks ago. A theme that I've noticed is that they're all talking about how they need to be in better condition, like just truly, you know, cardio condition. Because when you went back to that Boston series in the playoffs, when we mentioned how bad the bench was, that led Coach Scott Brooks to using the starters even more than he already had been. And there were definitely times when Wall in particular was getting worn down. You could just see it, especially defensively. He wasn't always great and consistent on that end. But Wall and Morris in particular have talked this offseason about building up their cardio, getting in shape, so that doesn't happen again. So I think that'll be interesting to see the shape that they all come into. As a couch potato, I never like questioning the shape that any of these guys come into. But, you know, Wall could – but last year he was dealing with the knee situation, so he wasn't able to really beef up his training preseason. And he was, you know, on some level, I think, catching up all year. But even in the past, there have been times where you kind of look and you're like, he doesn't look like he's maybe in 100% peak condition. Maybe there's a chance we get closer to that John Wall this time.
What about Bradley Beal's leg? We know he's had those multiple stress fracture and stress reaction issues, but last year it was no problem. They played him a ton of minutes, and in the past, when you play Brad Beal a ton of minutes, it normally results in a stress reaction happening. That didn't happen last year, so I'm feeling pretty good about the nature of that leg injury. How's sort of Wizards people feeling about his leg and those problems that hopefully are now in the rearview mirror?
Yeah, no, obviously that's the biggest, question mark, only in the sense that the past is what it was, that he, you know, his first four seasons, he only played over 63 games one time because he constantly kept missing games with various leg injuries in particular. Last year, didn't have that issue, played 77 games, averaged 35 minutes. The Wizards changed some of their training staff last year, and Bradley Beal, one of his brothers, is a bodybuilder, physical trainer type guy. And I remember at the beginning of the year talking to people on both of those ends about how they were working to get Bradley Beal, you know, you try some different things to get him in some better shape. He's also been, you know, works with, I guess he's like celebrity basketball trainer Drew Hanlon. He was like really, Beal was like his first client that got Drew Hanlon on the map. Seems like between all those elements, he's in pretty good shape. I mean, I'm looking, you look at his numbers. He had pretty good numbers last year. I actually think there's more, there's another level or two to go. I'm picking Beal to make the All-Star game this year. I think we can even see more from him. His dribble drive game got a lot better as the year went on. That was part of his improvement, which should hopefully result in more free throw attempts. He last year was a career high at 4.4, and that's still not, you know, there's still more to go. So I think we could see a better Bradley Beal this year.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you next. Do you think there's room for improvement with him? And obviously you do think there is. I think there is as well. I think he's a pretty solid guy that you can take at the end of the second round, start of the third round type of area. Do you think that he leads the team in scoring? Last year, him and John Wall were both tied at 23.1 points per game. Do you think that he can be the leading scorer this year?
I think he can be. I mean, it's always that tricky line of, you know, I always think that John Wall is is essentially a pass first point guard, and I always think you don't want that guy leading your team in scoring, because if you do, it sort of means the pass first point guard is shooting a lot, and John Wall can certainly get to the basket. We all know that, but you know, I think they'd be better off if Bradley Beal is the guy who's getting up more shots. And you know, you want to see John Wall, at least the Wizards side of things, you want to see John Wall's assist numbers go up, and maybe that scoring drop off a little bit, because that means Bradley Beal and Otto Porter and maybe the bench guys as well are the ones who are scoring more. So yeah, I would probably at this moment, I probably would say Beal leads the team in scoring, but Wall certainly gonna, you know, get his fair share for sure.
John Wall took more shots per game than Bradley Beal last season, which I think a lot of people would be a little bit surprised about. It was only one shot per game extra, but still, when I looked at it, I was like, okay, I expected Beal to take that extra shot, because Beal was significantly more efficient than Wall as well. Shot, 48% from the field, 40% from three, that sort of a range. And, I think there is that step that he can go forward and become a guy that, probably cracks the top 25 this year. He's got that ability to get that high, and, taking him around that zone when shooting guards in fantasy draft are harder to come by, that position can get pretty thin. Beal's ability to be efficient, hit three, score, but also add in some assists, and if he can get those steal numbers up as well, can really even maybe push towards the top 20. So Beal's an exciting player for this season. One guy who was a real steal last year was Otto Porter. He was undrafted in many drafts. He was picked very late, and he put together significantly improved numbers in obviously what was his best season. He signed that huge restricted offer deal with the Nets, which the Wizards promptly matched. So he's back on a huge $100 million plus contract with the Wizards. But over the second half of the season, Ben, his numbers started to tail off. Now, I don't know if that was Porter dropping. I don't know if that was the fact that Bogdanović was there and his minutes were reduced, because they were reduced over that second half of the season. And without Boyan there now, do they go back up? But what do we make of Otto Porter for this season? Do we expect him to improve on what we saw last season? Will he actually get more touches, considering he was one of the best shooters in the NBA? His usage was a putrid number on pretty much the whole time, 12% some games, 13%. Like, he was well below average in terms of usage. So what do we expect with Otto this year? Is it going to be just more of the same?
Yeah, I mean, the splits were pretty staggering. 47% three-point shooter pre-All-Star break, 34% after scoring dropped to almost 4 points a game. Everything went down, but also did minutes, which you mentioned, Bogdanović, and I think that was a factor. Otto Porter, you said that in fantasy drafts, he was undrafted and overlooked. I think that's really how it went with a lot of the opposing teams for a chunk of the year. There was a game against Memphis where Otto Porter lit Memphis up, and Tony Allen, after the game, noted defender, said that Otto Porter wasn't even mentioned in the game plan, which seems like Tony Allen may have taken a cat nap or something for a minute, because that seems impossible for starting small forward. But I think it was sort of the point of John Wall, Bradley Beal, let's focus on those guys. Otto Porter, he'll catch some balls in the corner. We can live with that. But once he got to the All-Star break, I think teams made that adjustment. They started getting out on him more. The ball ended up going to Markieff Morris maybe a little bit more. The teams were willing to let him take threes. They said, nope, we're not going to let Otto Porter get to us. I think the key for Otto Porter is, I mentioned how Bradley Beal improved his dribble drive game last year. Otto Porter, that's the next evolution for him. When John Wall and Bradley Beal go to the bench, or went to the bench last year, if Otto Porter was the main guy on the court, you'd like to think that the offense could revolve around him. But ultimately, he's more of a complementary player, because they had no point guard to get him the ball. Things kind of just died for him without Wall and Beal to some degree. I think of Otto Porter, we see it occasionally, but not enough. He needs to be able to get his own shot. He needs to be able to create off the dribble. Having Tim Frazier out there when he's with the backups will be nice. But if he can get his own shot, he only took, he took less than two free throws a game last year. Between getting his own shot, getting to the line more, and just being a facilitator on some level, will open up the offense for everybody, and including himself. So I expect a good year, but I'm curious to see how much of that part of his game has improved.
He is a guy that, and I know people that listen to this podcast all the time know what I'm going to say, but his value in certain ranking systems is significantly inflated by the fact that he just does not turn the ball over at all. And people who listen to this show would know that I don't really care about the turnovers. When the turnover category is your biggest fantasy contribution, which it is for Porter, and it's not even marginally, we're talking about 70% higher than the next contribution, that's where players might tend to get overvalued. If you look at his value, including turnovers, he's like the 28th ranked player for this year. If you look at it without turnovers, he's outside the top 50. And I think that's more realistic expectation. If you're taking Porter inside the top 30, I just don't think you're going to be successful doing that, because again, most of his other categories are below average. His steals are good. He's quite good in the steals. He has nice efficiency, but at 48%, that's basically just even of where you need to be. You know, his free throws, they're great, but he doesn't get to the line, so he's not influencing anything there. So you do need to be careful that when you see some rankings and we'll have Porter up inside the top 30 or top 25, that it is factoring in a large chunk of those turnovers, and that to me is not a great way of going about it. And we also have to factor in that second half of the season when that 48% three-point shooting didn't stick. So what is Otto Porter? Like, which one of those is real? It's probably somewhere in the middle of those. He can improve other areas, but his usage is still going to remain low with Beal and Wall on the court, and Morris takes a significant chunk of usage as well. So expecting his scoring to go through the roof is not going to necessarily happen. He's a good rebounder, but he's not a good passer. So there's numerous things that are against him, and I fear that some people, if you're not paying attention, you might go a little bit high on Porter, especially after what he delivered last year. And if you rely solely on rankings, it's not going to work out all that well. The other thing we need to worry about, I think, Ben, with Porter is his constant hip problems. It bothered him his first season in the NBA, his second season. Now, I don't think he missed a game last year, but it felt like that he was always, he missed two games, sorry. He was always in doubt. There were games that he left early due to the hip, and it just feels like it's something that constantly comes up. Is that something that you've noticed as well and have any concern over?
Yeah, no, and thanks. I meant to mention that in terms of his numbers dipping. Yeah, look, I mean, he is, he's got that kind of body that you think a strong, stiff wind is going to knock him over. It's a concern. Probably the biggest concern I have for him for his career is sort of, can he really deal? He's not a great athlete on an NBA level. So when he's going up against quicker small forwards, sometimes he's not the most fleet of foot. But the bigger issue is when he's going up against, beefier small forwards, can he bang with them? He's a much better rebounder than you would think looking at him, but that physical build, it is a question. How does it hold up over time? So you mentioned the hip. Yeah, that is something I think to wonder about. I don't get that. Look, the Wizards obviously just gave him a $106 million contract over 4 years. Presumably they're not worried about it long term. I don't get the sense that it's anything that crazy. The last game we saw him play, he had pretty big stats in that game 7 loss to the Celtics. So, he got through it even at the end of the year, even when he was dealing with it. So I suspect he'll be okay, but yeah, definitely on the laundry list of things to check in on once we get to training camp.
Kelly Oubre was a guy that I think struggled as a rookie. That'd be fair to say. He got more of run in his second season. We saw him playing in those smaller ball lineups alongside Otto Porter a little bit more than what we'd seen the season before. His role was, I guess, muted when Bogdanović came, as we've mentioned for many of these players, but Boyan's not around. So Oubre probably moves into that sixth man role now on this team. And I do think that he is ready for a step forward, and I think we'll see a little bit more of him playing alongside Porter in that power forward position. What does Kelly Oubre need to do this season to take that step forward, and do you think he can do that?
So first off, you mentioned that lineup with Kelly Oubre playing alongside Porter. I mean, there was a point last year where that lineup with those two, Wall, Beal, and Gortat, was like a top 5 or 6 like net rating lineup in the NBA. It was a tremendous weapon for them the first half of the year. I think sort of after the Bogdanović trade, that for whatever reason, even when they used that lineup, it just didn't work as well. But that was an interesting lineup, and I would suspect Scott Brooks goes to that a lot. Look, Kelly Oubre, when you watch him play, he looks like a guy who should be making highlights all the time. He's got the look. He's got the athleticism. He's got crazy long arms. He's got a lot of confidence, which is not a bad thing, you know, in the world of professional sports, when you have bad days, bad weeks, whatever, you need to be able to maintain your focus to stay in there, which is also good because he only shot 28% from three last year. And, you know, the Wizards, you know, when he's out on the court, especially if he's out there with the starters, nobody's guarding him, right? He's the guy they're going to concede the shots to. If he can just get that 3-point shot up to 32%, which is kind of where he was as a rookie, but, you know, not on a ton of attempts, you know, 32, 33%, that's not a huge number, but that's going to be enough to make him, I think, help the Wizards justify keeping him on the court. Defensively, he can be a real threat. I think if he actually got, 25 minutes a game, he'd probably average more than a steal a game. He's really good he's better on individual defense, team defense, he gets lost. He's a guy who entered the league. His basketball sort of instincts were very raw. And I'm always curious if a player whose basketball instincts aren't so great when they enter the league, can they improve enough? He'll be a very interesting test case. Again, another guy that worked with Drew Hanlon. I talked to Drew Hanlon about him, and, you know, he's very high. One thing, just to sort of on a technical note, what Drew Hanlon told me, and I'm going to put this up on the Locked On Wizards podcast soon, when he worked with Oubre over the summer, he completely changed Oubre's shot. Before, Oubre was a lefty, his arm would be right in front of his face, right in front of his eyesight. Now he moved it, he shifted it, so when he's releasing the ball, it's off to the side. You know, presumably that would help. It's good to see the basket when you're shooting, and, you know, based on his numbers, you know, he definitely needed to do something to get that 3-point shot up.
The shooting is something that is a huge concern for him. As you said, the steal numbers could be really nice for Oubre if he gets an increased role, but what he does do poorly is horrendous in terms of assist rate. Like, he's just not a guy, and that ties into what you said with his sort of awareness on the court. Like, the assists just don't come. He's not a good shot blocker. He's not a good rebounder. So he's a fair way away from being a fantasy relevant sort of guy. But if we see these minutes push forward, the steal numbers can be useful. If he started hitting the threes, that can be useful. But he's more just a guy to watch for really sort of deep leagues at the moment. We're not at any situation of thinking he's taking roles off Morris or off Porter or anything like that. More just pushing forward with a couple of extra minutes this season and hopefully improving on that 3-point shooting. A guy that I really liked last year, Ben, was Tomas Satoransky, who came across from the Czech Republic. They drafted him a few years earlier in the second round. He's a biggish point guard, like 6'4", 6'5", I think, maybe even 6'6", but very, very athletic, you know, highlight dunk type of guy. He can hit threes, passes, play some decent defense. And I thought that for majority of the start of the season, he should have been playing over Trey Burke. And I thought he was a better player at the start of last season than what Kelly Oubre was providing. But Scott Brooks didn't agree with me, and he was buried and then went back behind Brandon Jennings in the rotation. And we had something come out from Brooks today saying that, you know, if Satoransky wants to be in the rotation, he needs to play positions other than what he thinks is his best. So meaning he's not going to play him as a point guard. So where do we see Satoransky this season? What sort of role is he playing? Is he challenging Jody Meeks for that backup shooting guard spot? Like, where is he at in the rotation this season?
Well, so just to sort of tie this into something about Oubre that I just wanted to drop in, they both have this sort of the same thing. But because the Wizards didn't really make any big moves in the offseason, because they've only had – Oubre is the only first-round pick they've had who's on the team in the last 4 years. You know, when you look at how is this team going to get better – if somebody's going to make a big leap, I would say Oubre is the guy to hope for, which is why I think the Wizards will do what they can to figure out how to keep giving him minutes. Satoransky would be the other guy that I would point to. I mean, you mentioned, you know, this is only going to be his second year in the NBA. He's had experience playing overseas. He's like 25. He's got really good size on the guard. I always thought whenever he came in, he always came in engaged and ready to go. I mean, he didn't play a ton in the playoffs. But there was a point in the early series against Atlanta in the Boston series when they had that crazy Olynyk Oubre ejection situation. Satoransky came in that game and, you know, played solid minutes. And I always thought he looked the part, totally with you. I didn't understand why he wasn't given more of a shot consistently when Trey Burke in particular was faltering. But Scott Brooks didn't. And, you know, you mentioned some of the comments Brooks made. I guess something came out recently, but he said something earlier in the summer about this as well. It feels like he doesn't really view Satoransky as a point guard, which is a little frustrating, but nonetheless, he's got enough you know, he's got enough size to guard, you know, ones, twos, and threes, you know, maybe even fours, I guess, depending on who's, you know, who's playing in that spot. You know, his three-point shot was a disaster last year, only about 24%, but he shot a higher percentage over in Europe. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that maybe it was just that sort of first year coming in was a problem. Defensively, he definitely struggled going up against especially quicker guys. I think, though, he, unlike Oubre, has a very high basketball IQ. I think he's – I do think he's got a role. I don't know if the coach agrees, though, and that's what will be curious. When you sign Meeks and Frazier, it kind of takes the minutes away from him in the backcourt. We mentioned Oubre as a backup three, so he's – in any of those positions, he's the third string guy. Doesn't mean he's buried. Or, I'm sorry. Doesn't mean he has no chance. But it's, you know, it's hard to see right now off, you know, off the start of the season where he fits in exactly with this rotation.
I think what you're saying there is all 100% correct. And you talked about him shooting the three in Europe. Like his last season in Europe, he was a 41% shooter. The year before, he was a 44% shooter. So yeah, having a 20% drop is huge. I know it's a further back line, but that's a huge, huge difference. And I do think that he will be better at that three-point shooting. And I think that I'm with you. I don't know what's going to happen with him this year because I think that a lot of it is a personal thing with Brooks, not necessarily a personal thing. Like he doesn't like Satoransky as a person, but Brooks is just like, I don't value this guy as a player. And if he was in a different situation or on the same team with a different coach, I think we'd see Satoransky maybe even ahead of Meeks. He would have been ahead of Burke last year. He might be ahead of Tim Frazier. He can do so many different things. And I thought he was impressive majority of the time he was out there, but if Scott Brooks doesn't believe that, and if he doesn't agree with what I say, if he doesn't agree with what you say, then it doesn't matter for fantasy because he's not getting out there on the court. So if I'm in dynasty leagues, I'm holding because eventually I think that he will be able to show through all the different things that he can do, and he's got a very enticing overall fantasy skill set. But under Brooks, Brooks just doesn't seem to believe in him or doesn't see the same things that other people are seeing. So that's going to limit his total upside, I guess, with this team, which is unfortunate, but that's the way it goes. Now, we haven't spoken about Markieff Morris, who's a guy that feels like he's consistently underrated in fantasy circles. He was really solid for this team last year. He had a couple of poor performances in the playoffs with some foul issues, but he just consistently seems to give you these same sort of numbers. He's always telling us he's working on his three-point shot, so we'll see how that pans out and how many of those he takes. But yeah, he is hitting some threes, and he's got a chance to be a guy that hits over a three a game. He gets steals. His defense is always going to be a concern, especially with the blocks and his efficiency. But for what he does and for where he gets drafted, which is just inside the top 100, I think you can get 10, 20 spots of value out of Markieff, and no one's coming for his minutes, really, are they, Ben?
No, I mean, I'm sort of considered the Otto Porter apologist in the Wizards world. And since I've covered him, I also covered Georgetown, so I've covered Otto Porter his entire career in town. But there was a point last year, especially in the playoffs, where I was like, you know what, if the Wizards have a big three, I kind of think it's Markieff Morris. And maybe that's not totally fair in terms of just straight basketball, but it was I was looking at it more from a standpoint of if this person leaves the game, can the Wizards replace them? And the Wizard with Markieff Morris as a two-way threat, as a guy who's got some toughness, who can make that three, who's athletic enough to guard, you know, the Paul Millsaps of the world. He's the guy the Wizards put on LeBron James. You know, not that he's stopping LeBron, but to whatever effect somebody can, he's the guy they're putting on him. He shot 84% from the free throw line last year. 36% from three. I'm not sure if that was a career high. I think it might have been.
I think so.
That was impressive. His board work isn't great, but it's okay. But when he leaves, they just don't have somebody else to put in there. Jason Smith gives you a three-point threat, but he's not athletic enough to guard stretch fours. We mentioned Mike Scott. We'll see what he does. So, yeah, Markieff Morris, the biggest issue with him, honestly, is probably foul trouble and sort of losing his mind at times. He often would, it seemed like, would get 2-3 fouls in the first quarter or early in the first half and would have to sit sometimes. If he can work on that, don't know if he can, but, you know, if he can just sort of, you know, work on that foul trouble and, you know, help get a little more rebounding, you know, I mean, definitely think he could be a pretty good factor because like you said, I'm guessing he's not a guy who is drafted high. This is a complete irrelevant point on some level, but like somebody in Bleacher Report keeps ranking him like really low among power forwards, and Markieff Morris keeps noticing. So it keeps coming up in conversations, and it does feel like there's people out there who just don't view him as a guy who's anywhere close to the top, you know, half of the league in power forwards. I would think he's closer to that than he isn't.
The reason that people do underrate him, I find, and do that, is because they take his off-court persona into it, and they just think this guy is just a shit bloke, and therefore he must be a bad basketball player. And I'm not condoning any of the things he's done off the court, or you know, issues in locker rooms he had in Phoenix, or any of that sort of stuff, or arguments and throwing towels at coach, whatever. I don't condone any of that, but when he's on the court, like, he plays well, and people do discount him for that, and that continually happens in fantasy. He was a steal for me in drafts last year. You could get him really late. He's come up a little bit this year, but I still think there is value in getting Markieff Morris this season, because he is a guy that seems consistently underrated. Now, the last three guys, Ben, on this roster, Chris McCullough, Sheldon Mack, and Daniel Achufu, they contributed very little last season. They'll contribute very little again this season. But out of those three guys, you know, who's the one that potentially could take a step forward?
We probably would be better off me asking about your accent, if that's Australia and what part or not, than talking about any of these guys being contributors. But you know, I think Sheldon Mack, he's got a bulldog mentality. Defensively, I think he could be a factor for the Wizards. And when you look at, you know, Jody Meeks, I don't know, you know, if he's really going to be that kind of defensive stopper type. You know, Sheldon Mack might be able to be that guy for them. The Wizards had a pretty lousy summer league roster this year, in the sense that, you know, no draft picks, and you know, it wasn't a very exciting group. But Sheldon Mack was probably the most interesting of the players. You know, he's got some good size on the wing. I wouldn't say he'll ever be a great scorer, but you know, he was a pretty good scorer in college. Showed some of that in summer league. So I think there's a chance, especially if defensively Scott Brooks, you know, decides he needs somebody on the wing, you know, to get after, you know, some tough guy on the other team, that maybe he could sneak in there. Chris McCullough looks miles away from being a viable NBA player. And you know, Daniel Achufu is interesting, but, you know, again, with Gortat and Mahimi, it's just hard to imagine how he ever gets on the court barring injury.
Now, you don't have many options for this next question, but who is your breakout candidate on this team?
You know, I'm not saying he will get there, but, I mean, it feels like it's Kelly Oubre's job, Kelly Oubre's award to lose. You know, there are times when you watch him, you're like, wow, he really does have the goods to be something big. I mean, when you factor in his look, his attitude, everything, if he can really get it going, I think Kelly Oubre could be a huge star in the league. I don't mean on the Durant, LeBron level, but he could be a guy that people gravitate to. I mean, you even heard like Bill Simmons talk about how much he liked Oubre last year, a guy who, again, shot under 30% from three, but he's got a presence about him. If he can get that percentage up, combined with his athleticism, you know, he gives the Wizards an open court element to run with John Wall that they just don't have a lot elsewhere. So he's the obvious candidate, and we'll see. I mean, you know, he's got a shot, but we need to see what he's doing with his own shot before I'm ready to say, you know, he's going to take that next step this year.
Yeah, I think he's the realistic candidate as a breakout guy. In terms of looking at value fantasy guys, there's not much in terms of value on this team. Like Markieff Morris, the guy I already talked about, but Otto Porter is going just inside the top 50, and that's probably about right. John Wall is going at pick 10, which to me is a little bit too high, but it's not the wrong decision to me. He's a guy that goes between 11 and 16, perhaps in that sort of a zone. But if you took him at 10, it's not a wrong decision. And Beal at 33 and 28 is a fine spot to draft him. And as I said earlier, in terms of guys who are fantasy busts, it's Gortat. Like, you're not picking him at 61 or 64. And if you do, it's a bad decision, because he's just not going to be able to play those sort of minutes that are going to enable him to get the level of production you'd need from a guy who's going to be a fifth round pick. So that's not the guy you want there. But if you're looking for value, I think Markieff is the guy, and everyone else is sort of, you know, priced in right where they need to be, and that's totally fine. They're going to give you that solid value, you know, first, second for John Wall, and second, third round value for Beal, and you know, fifth round value for Porter, and that's sort of where they are. And if they give that again, which again, with this team having so little change, you expect a similar level of production for the majority of these guys. That's totally fine. Now, to finish this off, Ben, I've been asking the guests that come on to give me their over-under for win totals. We had Vegas release the over-unders yesterday. Also look at Kevin Pelton's win projections. And for this team, they are exactly the same. Vegas has them at 47.5 wins over-under, and Pelton has them at 47.5 as well. So which way do you lean? Are we looking at over or under 47.5 wins?
So last year they got 49 wins, and other than Mahimi, they largely stayed healthy. I mean, the starting five, you know, more or less played the whole season. And they also got 49 wins with a disaster bench. The bench should be better with Frazier and Meeks. You wonder if they can maintain that overall good health. If I put it all together, I don't feel great about this to put money on it, even though I like going to Vegas, but give me the over. I think the Wizards, the first month or two of the season, have a chance to be first or second in the East. I know that sounds insane on some level, but Cleveland and Boston, no matter what anybody thinks of their offseason moves, they've got to figure out how to make all that work. The Wizards essentially brought back their whole team, at least of the starters, and that type of continuity, I think, will help. I think the issue for the Wizards is, are they going to be consistent? They weren't always last year, especially defensively. They just had some ridiculously poor outings at times. If they are focused from the start and play hard, I think the Wizards could get out of the gate really quick. So I'll go over, but I don't love it enough that I would tell anybody to, you know, make any real wagers on it.
Yeah, I feel pretty much the same way. I think they can go over and get 48, 49. Yeah, not too far over, but that's sort of where I see them sitting as well. And I think that wraps up everything we need to talk about with the Washington Wizards. Ben, thank you for coming on, and give us a plug of any of your work that you want to get out there and promote.
No, I appreciate it. This is a lot of fun. Yeah, I mean, obviously the Locked On Wizards podcast, you know, during the season, obviously 5 days a week, sometimes more right now, just sort of getting ready to gear up for the off for the training camp in the season. I'm on Twitter all the time at Ben Standig on there. So I'm excited. I mean, this conversation has me thinking about doing fantasy basketball. I've played it many times in the past. I have in the last couple of years just because of life and whatnot, but maybe I need to get back into it. Any site recommendations or any format recommendations that you recommend for somebody who's played but hasn't been in it for a minute?
I host the majority of my leagues on a site called Fantrax, because there's a ton of customization there, and they've been really good with everything that they offer in terms of flexibility. Whatever site you play on, it's pretty easy to adjust to. It doesn't really matter. You've got to make sure that the person who's running it knows how to actually work that site and run everything. Yahoo's the least customizable out of all those sites, I find, and the most inflexible. But in terms of format, you're playing head to head, so you've got a weekly battle against your mates is the best way to go, and try and avoid playing in points leagues, which is the same sort of situation as fantasy football, because for basketball they're just not as fun. And you can play the other nine category leagues, and it'll get you more interested in it playing it that way, and you'll find yourself going down the rabbit hole of working out which players you're adding and cutting and trading and all that sort of stuff, and leave your Wizards biases behind.
Fair enough. Cool. I will look into it. Absolutely. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Ben, once again for coming on. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Tim Frazier.